the common thread was that my discontent was coming from this feeling of confinement. I don't know if you've ever ordered a bed mattress from Amazon, but I have, and it's in the typical Amazon box. And you're thinking to yourself, how in the world did they fit a king-size mattress in this box? And you take the, you know, scissors, you open up the box, and then 3 days later, you've got a king-size mattress. It's slowly expanded to fill the size it was designed to be. And I felt like I was that mattress in that box, just feeling so compressed by these metaphorical boxes that I felt like I was in, but did not serve me.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, going strong like six-pack abs today, known as Podmatch.com, the wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts. And if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed. That's right, indeed. We got a freaking chain breaker in the building, one of those glass ceiling crushers, y'all, that'll actually crush through the glass ceiling and actually come out okay and not have blood spatter everywhere. Because that's the part they don't talk about, the glass ceiling breaking. Because today's wonderful guest, she's a best-selling, award-winning author, y'all. That's right, as well as a mom, a serial entrepreneur, nonprofit leader, and a philanthropist. Let's give it up for the brilliant and powerful Betsy Papine. How you doing today, Betsy?
I'm doing great, Dom. Glad to be here.
Oh, yeah, glad to have you. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. I hear you giving Kellogg a run for his money. That's right, indeed. All the cereal you're eating with your businesses, helping out folks, feeding folks, metaphorically speaking.
We try. We do try.
Who am I kidding? It ain't about cereal boxes. It's about you. And I probably forgot a whole bunch of things since intro is not allowed to cover all of it. So mind filling in on any cavities I may have missed about you, Betsy?
What? Total aside, I actually don't have any cavities. I mean, I know you're not asking me that, but yeah, I was so blessed. I have an identical twin sister. And for some reason, when we were kids, my mother had fluoride put on my teeth, had it painted on, and didn't on hers. So she has cavities and I don't.
That's funny. That's hilarious. I think you're probably the first person to actually make a teeth reference after I jokingly say cavities. That's hilarious. Yeah, you've been siphoning, or should I say, you've been secretly having secret armor put on your teeth this whole time. That's right, indeed. You've been telepathically telling the sister's teeth, like, hey, you go bad, mine stay good. That's right. That twin telepathy in action. That's what I'm talking about. Dave, so what got you in the business? So here you started a bit in healthcare, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I started my career in healthcare. You know, my father was is a physician, and my sisters and I grew up working alongside him at the hospital, helping him with things. And we were all pre-med at college, and there was a lot of talk, and I think for me, pressure to be a physician. But I didn't want to be one, unlike my sisters. And so in college, I went a different way. Junior year, went and majored in business. And then went on to graduate school and had a career in pharmaceuticals. I was in the marketing department of different corporate headquarters, developing the materials that sales reps use to talk to physicians and patients about their products. And I did that for about a decade, was not really happy in that industry. And, you know, God has a way of making things right and had me laid off from that industry. And so, you know, I think that was a blessing. I was shocked at the time. The company that I was working for was a one product company, and we did not get FDA approval. And it didn't look like we would be getting FDA approval anytime soon. So they disbanded the commercial division, which I was a part of. But it was truly one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it really made me reevaluate what I was doing. And maybe this was a time when I could explore something totally different and something that I actually enjoy doing. And so that's when I decided to give real estate a try and loved it from day one and have been able to, you know, fortunately make a living from that instead. So I've been doing real estate now for 20 years.
Oh, so I got a real.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Happy 20th anniversary. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Two whole decades. That's right, indeed. The grind be real. That's right, indeed. Some folks don't make it past step one or two. It's like, hey, come on, get your license now.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. It's like, and then after that, it's like, hey, I got to sell some stuff, you know, and keep on selling. Make sure we have some happy clients here. It's like, oh, and they got to keep on having more happy clients like rabbits. And it's like, oh, crap. And then a pandemic shows up out of nowhere and smacks you. It's like, yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. We were lucky. The real estate industry, I think, was one of the few industries, at least in Florida, that thrived, because we didn't shut down. And a lot of people were flocking to Florida. So it was actually a great time for us. Work-wise, I mean, obviously there was a lot of other things going on, but in terms of work, at least we didn't have the inability to work that, unlike a lot of our colleagues.
Yeah, that migration was real. It's like, wait, y'all staying open? All right. Yeah, Exodus begin.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right, indeed. Moses is in the air. We see the staff, but don't see it really. It's pointing towards the Lord in this case. That's right. A lot of people go.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about, dude. So what do you think have been some of your keys to success for being successful for so darn long? It's 20 years. That's freaking awesome.
Well, you know, honestly, successful is so individual. Because despite my success, you know, I've had a lot of blessings in terms of being recognized for my companies, you know, regionally, nationally, but I can't say I was always happy. And so sometimes, you know, I think we pursue things that we think will make us successful, and then I assume thus happy. And so I just want to just be careful that people don't do what I did and just looked at what the next goal was in terms of an accolade or a sale number, and not enjoy the journey and making sure that what I was striving for was something I truly wanted versus just something to check off and feel like, okay, I did that. What's next? So that as a caveat, I think a lot of it has to do with the environment we're born into. And I was born into an environment that was very goal-oriented, very focused. So I saw patterns of behavior from my father and my mother, and it's easy to emulate what you are around. And so I can't really take any credit for that. I just did what, you know, basically I saw and was told to do. So I think the other thing, I'm not sure where I got it from, but very early on, I recognized the power of a mentor. In all aspects of my life, not only just in my business, but in my financial life, in my spiritual life, in my health journey, and identifying people either near or afar that were a couple of steps ahead of me where I wanted to be, and watching what they did. Sometimes the mentorship was very structured, and sometimes to this day, they would have no idea that they were my mentor, but watching them and watching what they do and emulating that, I'm a big proponent of not reinventing the wheel. I think that most everything has been done before. And if we just learn and observe, we can really change our outcomes if we so desire. So I think having that understanding of a mentor and utilizing that as best as I can as I go out my journey, I think has been instrumental and has probably accelerated my growth in ways that I never could have done on my own.
Yes, right indeed. Great indeed. It's always good having a mentor. Those are like having a book on steroids. It's like, yay.
Exactly.
Yeah, emulation is freaking for real. It's like, all right, cool. It's like, I need some advice. Like, hey, can you be like my shortcuts so, you know, I don't take the long road like you did and fall into a ditch and fight a crocodile, then an alligator, then put on bunny ears and have to fight a panda for no reason and come back on the other side. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Indeed. So my goodness, so since you have some success, I'm sure there have been some setbacks along the way. So any major setback that actually ended up being a setup for your success?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, like I mentioned, that being laid off, huge setback in my life. Never faced that. And fortunately, have never had that again, because I think the other thing that I learned is I didn't like having somebody tell me I didn't have a job. So going into real estate, nobody would ever have the ability to tell me that. I'm in control of that. So it was very scary when I was laid off. I was recently single with a 1 and a 2-year-old. Actually, they were a couple of years older than that. I got divorced when they were 1 and 2, and then I was laid off shortly after that. So that was a huge setback. But again, that gave me the freedom to explore things that were better suited to what really made my heart sing. So that was definitely a blessing. A huge setback in my personal life, especially when my children were at such a young age. But I think both my ex and I agree it's the best thing that ever happened to us is our divorce. You know, we're both so much happier now than we would ever been together. But again, at that time, you think your world's falling apart. But if you use that time constructively and figure out what did that experience teach me, what did I learn from it and grow from it and take that into your future relationships, it just makes everybody better. So that's how I kind of look at things now. Sometimes people ask me, well, how, because I'm constantly trying new things, starting new businesses, exploring just constantly. And it's because I don't have this fear of failure. Like, I don't believe failure exists. I feel like failure is another box we can put our actions in or other people's actions in, but it's really a mental construct like so many other things in our environment. And for me, I always say, okay, Betsy, what's the worst that's going to happen if I try this? And I usually write it on paper because sometimes fears can manifest and just grow so much bigger when they're not written down. But worst case scenario is the event doesn't have the outcome I want. So I have to make a pivot that I, again, didn't want or hope for. But I learned something very valuable that I can take with me throughout my journey and that will make me even better in the future. So that's worst case scenario. And I can live with that. So it just reduces any fear I have about trying something new, because I know I can handle the worst case scenario, which, you know, studies have shown worst case scenario happens about 3% of the time. So, you know, I think that has been a great strategy for me to employ, to have the courage to try and stay outside my comfort zone.
There you go. Employ that strategy. Indeed. Right. Indeed. It's like, hey, what's the worst that could happen? I'm like, yeah, it'll be fine. You know, it'll be on the other side. You know, it's like the worst case scenario. You end up in UPS metaphorically in a box somewhere. It's like, hey, I got to break out this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of breaking through boxes and getting out your comfort zone, you're able to put pen to paper and join the business of immortality. So what prompts you to write your first of many books to come?
Yeah, I wrote the book, like I alluded to earlier, about 7 years ago. I found myself increasingly discontent despite the external validation that my companies were getting. And it took me a while to even admit that to myself. It didn't really feel like I had the right to be unhappy. But once I did and really start to explore what that source of unhappiness was through a variety of different modalities, meditation, yoga, therapy for the first time, EMDR, bioenergetic work, just a whole bunch of different modalities, journaling. The common thread was that my discontent was coming from this feeling of confinement. I don't know if you've ever ordered a bed mattress from Amazon, but I have. And when it arrives at your door, it's in the typical Amazon box. And you're thinking to yourself, how in the world did they fit a king size mattress in this box? And you take the, you know, scissors, you open up the box, and then 3 days later, you've got a king size mattress. It's slowly expanded to fill the size it was designed to be. And I felt like I was that mattress in that box, just feeling so compressed by these metaphorical boxes that I felt like I was in, but did not serve me. And so started journaling those stories and times in my life when I felt most confined. And when I started sharing those stories with other people, it's universally felt. What I found was some were more aware of the boxes that they were in than others. Some were okay in some of the boxes they were in. Some were not okay, but didn't know how to navigate out of them. And some were like me at the beginning, where they knew they were unhappy, but they weren't sure why. So because of those experiences, I thought, you know what, if I'm in this boat, if my friends and peers are in these feeling the same way, this could help people. And my mission in all my companies and my life is to improve and empower the lives of others. And so I thought, let's publish this book. And it's funny because when I told people I was going to write a book and it was coming out, they all was, you know, they assumed it was some business book, you know, how to build a real estate brokerage, how to build a real estate team, how to make X dollars in business, how to be an entrepreneur. But the book is nothing like that. And in that, in a way, was even another box I think I broke out of, because it's such a deviation from what I do every day. And it's an audience and topic that is very different than it would be if I was writing a very different kind of book. So that's why I wrote it. I wrote it hoping that it would help one person see something in a different way, help them and liberate them and give them the tools to start taking the steps to exit a box if it no longer serves them.
There you go. So you heard that right, folks. You have the power of an Amazon king-size comfortable mattress. That's right indeed. Don't be in that box forever. You got to come out the box. You got to rise up like your cake in the oven, just baking. That's right indeed. And then wait until your freshman 15 appear metaphorically. Then you just pop out of nowhere. And it's like, I'm here. That box was way too cramped, darn it.
Yeah.
So it was like putting the book together, because I listened to probably like 50% through the audiobook, and some of the stuff in there, it's like, man, it probably sucked having to relive through some of that. So it was like getting all the stories together for the book.
Yeah, that was tough. I resisted that for a while, because you're right, you do really relive it, which was therapeutic in a way too, but it was definitely very emotionally difficult. And it took me a year to write. You know, I hear people writing books in 30 days. I don't know how I could have actually, honestly, if I was writing a book about how to start a real estate brokerage, that I probably could have done in 30 days. But because this topic was so different for me, it took me a year. But I also wasn't on a tight time frame. Because I wasn't trying to hit a certain date to get it released. A lot of my colleagues who have written books write books as a lead gen tool for their business. I wasn't doing that. So I really wasn't on a timeline to have to finish this at any point in time. So I just committed. I always try to break down larger goals into much smaller, manageable steps. And so for me, what was manageable was to commit to writing 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And 1 hour a day got me one page a day. I took the weekends off. And so at the end of the year, I had the book. Because I didn't know what I was doing and hadn't written really anything other than journaling since college, I hired a developmental editor who helps you develop, just make sure that the stories flow from a third party's perspective. You know, this woman didn't know me from Adam, so she could point out things like, hey, what does that mean? Because she has no reference point. So it was just great to have a third party look at my book and catch things that I would not have caught because I'm way too close to the topic. As you know, I had my sister read it and my daughters read it, but again, they would miss things because they were so close to me. And so I hired that person who was really helpful for me. And she also kept me accountable because I had to turn in 20 pages every 2 weeks. And so I loved having that accountability. So that helped the process for me. And I wasn't as isolated. You know, writing is very isolating and it's a very solo pursuit. So it felt like I had somebody along with me for the ride. So that was really helpful. And then I decided to do a hybrid publisher. So I hired a company to help me do that. And that was really interesting for me. I love to learn and I'd never been a part of that process. I think probably the thing I was most surprised about this whole journey, we released the book in September and I had no idea that I thought when you release the book, you're done. You know, now I realize you're halfway done. You truly are. Now I just didn't understand. I just was so naive about once you birth the book, now you have to let people know it exists. And so that whole marketing initiative and effort is just as much work, honestly, as writing the book. And if I was going to do anything differently, if I was going to do this again, I would have ramped up the promotion of the book and building an audience for that topic and theme before launching the book. My following really knows me for business and for real estate. And so now I'm trying to bridge the gap. But it's okay. I mean, lesson learned, but you know, if your audience is in the same path that I am, that is one thing that had I done that the sequencing a little differently, it would have made this part of my journey a little bit easier.
That's all good. I say freaking success so far. You got it. Got 55 reviews for the book. You got it in 4 different forms. And you're reading the book too, which is extra bounty points in my book. Always appreciated when the author reads their own book. So I say it's a success. Shoot. Need to pat yourself on the back.
Oh.
And a self high five.
It's funny. Reading the book, I mean, you would have no problem because you do podcasts for one of your jobs. So that's great. I mean, for me, I don't. And so having to read for an audience is very different. I read incessantly, but I don't read out loud. And I realized just so much of the enunciation and the pausing and, you know, they don't see you're coming to the end of the chapter, but you have to lower your tone so that there's closure, so that you have to use your voice in so many different ways because they don't have anything visual. And I didn't realize, I mean, that sounds so basic now, but that was not apparent to me until I started that process. So that was a really interesting journey. I'm glad I did that because I was tempted to just hire somebody to read it for me, but so glad I did it.
Yeah, probably felt like you had 6-pack abs afterwards.
I was physically exhausted. You know, that's the other thing. I'm sure you know, but when I flew up to Chicago to have it done in the studio and I thought I would just, you know, crank it out in a day. And the gentleman's like, oh, no. And I said, oh, no, I'll be fine. He's like, it's not you. It's your voice. Your voice is only good for 3 to 4 hours of solid recording time. So I was like, wow. And you can hear it. Like, I didn't know that. But you can hear people's voices if you're tuned in. So you really are only fresh for that period of time. And so we had to do it over the course of 4 days.
Yep. See, we had to do all 18 holes of the golf course.
Yeah.
That's right, indeed. Four. yeah. That's right, indeed. That's right. Feel your pain, indeed. That's like, it's like I read the same sentence four different times here. Like, dang gummit, this is my mother tongue. Well, I know English. Like, why can't I pronounce this word? Like, dang gummit, man.
Yeah.
Right indeed. So what you learned about yourself through the whole process, because you're basically done with all the heavy lifting. Now you're just on the evergreen promotional tour of just getting to work out there and spreading the good word that Betsy's freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think what I learned and what I had to overcome was imposter syndrome, which I know a lot of people experience in all realms of their lives. I'd been in my little comfort zone of real estate for so long that it's been a long time that I have felt that. But going into the author space and identifying as an author, that took a while to really feel comfortable. And now I do, but it definitely, I went through, what right do I have to write a book? Who cares about my stories? Do I write well enough to be an author? You know, all these things go through your head, but it's nice to come out the other side. It's just like just another boost of confidence that I do have the right to be here. I do take up space. My stories are valid, not valid, but they mean something. And people, from what the feedback I've gotten, is they are learning about themselves through my book and making positive changes in their life, which just truly means the world to me. Again, that's why I wrote the book. And so to have that come to fruition is incredibly rewarding.
Rewarding indeed. You'll love to see it. Indeed. So any plans for book number two?
Well, I'm developing a course that goes along with the book, but if I write another book, it will be a companion guide to the book, because the book is a lot of stories, and a lot of people are like, they like the stories. It shares so many different kind of boxes that exist in our world. But the request is more of a how-to. So I know what box I'm in. Now, how do I get out? And I delve into that a little bit, but 90% of the book is not that. So the book would be a more how-to guide on extricating yourself from boxes that no longer serve you.
So giving UPS a run for their money, huh? Helping folks to break out all their own boxes. That's right. Who knows? She might be coming for Amazon too. Folks got a lot of boxes they got to break out of to try to think aside of it. And folks are like, there is no box. It's like, yeah, because we robbed you of it. So now you got to be full of creative, buddy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, Dave. Well, let's rest these. Looking forward to that. So it'll be another piece to add on indeed. So my goodness, so since you've been on a bit of a wonderful tour promoting your magical work, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
Yeah, not really. I mean, they asked me a lot of questions and very honest and raw questions. So I would say no. I've been surprised by the vulnerability that people have shared with me after reading my book, or I've given a couple of talks on it. And so, no, I think I've been actually pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah, cool. So does faith still play a role in your life today?
Absolutely. You know, I was raised Catholic, and I still consider myself a Catholic. I don't go to church nearly as frequently as I did growing up, but I definitely align and feel comfortable in the Catholic Church. But there are some things that I don't agree with. And so I write in my book about that, about going to the priest and telling him everything I agreed with and everything I didn't agree with, not to obviously change his mind, but just to, I didn't want to feel like an imposter there sitting in a pew and feeling like people, or he, thought I agreed with everything that the Catholic Church espouses. And so that was very liberating for me to tell him how I felt, get his blessing, and still be welcome in the church. But yes, I mean, my faith is my rock. It's just, I don't know what, my life would be so different if I didn't have faith. And it's just been a cornerstone of my life.
So talking about deeds, right indeed. Especially when you escape the guilt box, if I'm not mistaken.
because that was another story in my book where I raised my children in a Methodist church, and Catholics are big on guilt. And my mother was also big on making her children feel guilty. And so that's always been just sadly a feeling that I have. And I remember when I couldn't meet an obligation at the church that I was at with my children volunteering. And I said to the woman, the children's director, "I'm so sorry. I feel so guilty about having to not be able to come to this." I think I was teaching a class or something. She's like, "Betsy, we don't do guilt here." And I just, like, I froze. I'm like, "What?" She's like, "We don't do guilt here." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, like a life without guilt." Like it never, and I was an adult, you know, and I just never realized there were people who didn't live with guilt in their lives. And I thought, wow, how freeing is that to not feel any guilt?
Yes, right indeed. Guilt free. You love to see it. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Especially that psychological weight.
That's yeah.
Right indeed.
Yeah.
That's right. It'd be so heavy. It's like, man, we're going to charge you extra money for shipping this box out, buddy.
Oh, my gosh.
So now you mentioned the companion book. Was there anything else you're excited about you got coming out in the next 6 to 12 months that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have the course, and that'll be coming out probably the end of February, early March. So that's, you know, again, something totally new to me. I'm going into a recording studio and recording the book or the course. And I am excited about that. I think that will be, it's just a really practical way for people to work through their own boxes. So, and that's something that with regards to this topic, I'm excited about for 2025.
Oh, there you go. So, sub for Women's History Month, huh? Break out your boxes, ladies. That's right indeed. They've been trapped in the box. That's right indeed. Have they been trying to keep the tape on it? Did they put duct tape on it to make sure it stayed closed?
Yeah, that extra reinforced tape, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, dude, are they trying to ship your metaphorical box all the way overseas to freaking Singapore? Like, no more. We're going to get you out of there before it even gets on the ship, y'all. So my goodness, a fun question for you. Your fabulous book, Breaking Boxes, Dismantling the Metaphorical Boxes That Bind Us. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
That's interesting. The only thing that immediately came to mind was pizza. Because it's in a box, right? But pizza's delivered in a box. And from the outside, you know it's pizza, but you really don't know how it tastes or what it looks like or what's on it or what's in it until you open the box and explore further.
There you go, pizza, y'all. Who doesn't like pizza?
And it happens to be my favorite food. But no, I mean, truly, because it's like you see the outside of a pizza box and you're like, oh, I know what's in that. And that is the big problem with boxes is once you slap a label on it, you assume you know what's inside when you know almost nothing. And so you open up a pizza box and it could be flatbread pizza. It could be Chicago deep dish. It could be vegan, gluten, you know, meat lovers. You just have no, it could be meatless, it could be tomatoless, sauceless, you know, it could just be like my daughter orders it with just the tomato sauce, no cheese. I mean, you don't have any idea. what's in that box.
Yeah, that's right indeed. It's like you heard that right, folks. Yep, it's a pizza, but you don't know what type of pizza it is, y'all. It's a surprise. Yeah. That's right. It could be a whole literal jack-in-the-box pizza. That's right indeed. You're probably like, dude, the box usually flatter than this. How the heck do you get a whole darn jack in there?
Yeah.
It's like kapow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny. When I went to Italy this summer, because I had been to Italy before, but I never noticed this. In the pizza boxes in Italy are literally at about half the height of our pizza boxes. And it throws you off. You're like, what's that? But they don't have thick pizza. You know, they don't have any, the dough is not thick at all. It's very flat. And so the pizza box doesn't need to be that high. And it's so funny to watch it. Cause I remember thinking that can't be pizza. That's not a pizza box, but their version of a pizza box is very different than ours.
Ah, so our pizza boxes have been smoking some weed. All right. I should have known. All right. It wasn't just them throwing anchovies on there for no reason. It's like, oh, the boxes were doing a little exploration, getting inside of the metaphorical pot instead of a box.
I'm just playing.
The boxes don't smoke weed. Unless that's another box, but that's probably another box, another episode. Well, anyways, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive. And that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Well, I would say, a couple of things. One is enjoy the journey. Don't take life so seriously. And truly, and I do this much more now than I ever did then, but I'm just so grateful for every day. I took my time here on earth for granted. And now that I'm 56, I don't take that for granted. I see people I know die on a regular basis for just a whole host of reasons. And so I'm much more aware that I'm very lucky to be here today. And it's just so hard. You know, I do have a 25-year-old and 26-year-old, and it's just so hard at that point in your life to understand how precious this life is. But that's what I would advise myself.
Precious indeed. It's right indeed. You got a precious gem known as life if you're listening to this podcast, y'all. That's right indeed. Be grateful for it. Keep it shiny. That's right indeed. That's right. Get it out of the box. Don't put it in a box. That's right indeed. Unless you're gifting it to others, that is. Through your talents, time, and treasure. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Shine bright, y'all. That's right. Like Betsy here. She believes in being bright. That's right indeed. Hashtag 56 and fabulous. You'll love to see it. That's right indeed. Got over that hump. But you're like, yep, I'm going to publish this book. That's right indeed. No lead gens here. That's right indeed. That's for the regular folks who want to be all business. Like, nah, fam, I got a story to tell. Folks have been in these boxes that are extra tight trying to go overseas and stay in seas. That's right indeed. Some of the boxes are shaped like letter C's. It's like, I got to make sure they get out of it and be free and creative and live their best lives ever. So my goodness. The good news is you're still just getting started because there's a whole bunch of life ahead of you still. So for those who need to keep up with your journey and cop some copies of your magical book, what's the best way for folks to do so, Betsy?
I'm sure. So my website, BetsyPapine.com, my name. You can sign up for my newsletter there. You can order my book from there. My book is also on Amazon and all major book retailers. I'm also on all the major social platforms, Instagram. It's my name, Betsy Papine. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. And on TikTok, I'm actually, my handle is Gainesville Realtor. But everything, all the other platforms, my handle is my name.
Woohoo! So you're that right, folks. All kinds of gains with Betsy, y'all. That's right indeed. If you're in the Gainesville, Florida area, check out some of her real estate business, y'all. She's doing great stuff indeed. Check out her socials and check out her wonderful website. I'm going to put a link to all of her goodies in the show notes. That way you can keep up with her because she's still got a whole boatload of content that awaits y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It's good stuff indeed. Indeed. Well, any parting words before we close up shop?
I just appreciate you, Dom. Thank you for having me. And I wish everybody a wonderful journey.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in. And if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.